Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. I am your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic, which means on Saturday, I watched the Commanders in their preseason opener. Yes, they lost 23-21. Some good things, though, from the quarterback. Some other curious things happened with the running back room. I'm still here at the stadium and here to discuss everything that went down. Is your favorite local radio host, maybe your favorite radio host anywhere, I don't know, he is the great Grant Paulson. Grant, we just watched actual football. No practice. We're not talking about practice. Actual football. Yeah, preseason, so maybe it's not actual football. But it was a game. People were getting hit. The scoreboard moved. That was fun.
It seems like this is too many days, but I looked this up. I actually Googled it to say how many days ago was whatever the last game was. And it's 223 days without being here at FedEx for a football game for me. They played one game the following week. But this was, weirdly to say, it was a blast for me to get back out here, see all you guys that are on the beat working hard covering the team. Obviously watch, as you said, authentic, legitimate National Football League football. And we're a month away from this thing being for real. But I think we actually got a couple of answers on some things we were interested in today. There are still lots of questions. We shouldn't make too much out of this game, but look, being out here, seeing everything, saying Commanders, no longer saying football team, it was a good day, and we turn the page now.
Yeah, I mean, great weather, and yes, the Commanders aspect, it's been so long since they changed the name that every time somebody says it's the first game, I'm like, wait, really? It feels like it's been forever because of just the way that everything's gone down, obviously, for the last few months. But yeah, the stadium, you know, look, I know people just have issues with the stadium. The stadium looks fine from what I could see. New paint, new signage. Everybody seems to be happy on that front. Of course, they'll be really happy if they win games. Again, we don't really care about the result today. They almost won. Sam Howell, really effective, really a great fourth quarter. Two rushing touchdowns, had some nice throws, had a two-point conversion that gave him the lead with a couple minutes to go, but the Panthers drove for a last-second or a field goal in the 24 seconds to go to win the game. But I think for the most part, quarterbacks rule the world in the NFL, and between what they got out of Carson Wentz and efficient performance from him and Sam Howell, sort of the, okay, you know, good job by the rookie. I think if you just want to go, like, ultra-positive, I think those, to me, are the two things that really kind of stood out.
Totally agree. And quarterback, not only with this team, with every team, is always going to be the most significant area you're trying to critique, right? It matters more than anything else. You good? Specific to, you know, Wentz's performance, nothing that lights the world on fire, but coming out of training camp with a lot of dings and knocks on accuracy and on some rhythm type stuff of the offense, I actually thought this was a very progressive step. For the most part, there was ball placement. I didn't think accuracy was an issue. Missed a couple of things, notably down the field, that he could have hit on. But when you go 10 of 13, 74 yards, mostly safe stuff, I thought this was just kind of like laying the foundation. It's a nice starting point, something to build on. I always kind of say in the first week of the preseason, there's nothing you can do as a starting quarterback that makes me feel overly optimistic, but you could do something that makes me feel pessimistic, and that did not happen. But the bigger story to me here is Sam Howell, because you do see him in practice. I've seen way less of him than you have, and I was just really interested to see at this speed. Ron Rivera talked after the game about his second string linebackers, I think it was, and the speed of the game and how difficult that can be when you just haven't experienced it. I was talking in the locker room with Jarrett Patterson about how last year it was jarring to him, how fast the game was. Sam Howell didn't look like a guy that needed to speed up. I mean, he was right there and doing everything he needed to be at the pace that needed to be done. You mentioned the two rushing touchdowns. He was 9 of 16 for a 143. He left some things on the field, but I don't know. You tell me, Ben. He showed off what is, to me, an above-average arm. He can spin it. We knew he was a good athlete. He could run a little bit. He had 7 100-yard games last year at North Carolina. I come away looking at him as a nice little backup option over these next couple years because I really think that he's got all the physical traits that you look for.
You know, there are guys who are fifth-round picks because they easily could have been seventh-round picks, and there are guys who are fifth-round picks who slipped the way Sam Howell did. And, look, obviously NFL teams are generally not completely moronic. Collectively, they all let him go to the fifth round. This obviously was a year where the quarterbacks got pushed back in general, but he was a guy that was projected to be possibly the number one pick in the draft going into last college season. There are skills there. The arm strength is real. Like the Madden football people say, ranked him among top 10 for arm strength, for whatever that's worth. By the way, I should mention, Grant and I are sitting in a booth at FedEx Field outside. There are a bunch of fans are out on the field, so that's the background noise. Just mentioning that in case you were wondering if we were like our basement or something.
A couple of people are like wrapping wires and doing like real human work that needs to be done at the stadium. So yeah, you're hearing all kinds of things behind us.
Great. But he looked good, and I've said this before on the podcast and elsewhere, like in practice, the arm strength is there. He looks in command when he's throwing the ball, no pun intended. He looks like he knows what he's doing. I think the combination with Kelvin Harmon was probably the most effective one throughout camp to this point. He's obviously doing it against the backups, the backups, and that was effectively the case today. But yeah, I think for what he's expected to do, he did a good job. Now, let's just be clear. He's the third string guy. I'm curious in the second half of the year, if something were to happen, would he go in over Heinicke? But that's a whole other topic. Carson Wentz is the starter. That's not up for debate. And yeah, he was a much more efficient guy today than we've seen in practice. I called it a sort of an Alex Smithian though type performance. It was in control. He was patient. He worked underneath. The down the field stuff didn't really connect. And that's obviously what he's known for with his arm strength. He absolutely loves throwing to the tight ends, even tight ends that nobody's ever heard of. He threw to those guys today a lot. So I think he did fine. He was relatively accurate. You know, he wasn't completely wild the way we've all been sort of tweeting to some degree at camp. I think that was good. Good first step. We'll just leave it at that. And you know, I think that was enough for now.
Yeah, and I think sometimes what happens is like everyone tries to make some declaration or has to have their takeaways from the game. And I think it's okay to just say they played a preseason game and he was fine and did some decent things. The word I would say is efficient. And I agree with you about Alex Smith. That's a great kind of description for fans who have been around of this team for a few years, in that it was the ultimate kind of take what's there. Don't try to do anything off schedule, really. One subtle thing that I did really like about his performance, Wentz, I'm speaking about, obviously, is it. When people go back and watch, I think they're going to notice that he did a good job moving in the pocket. There were at least two, maybe three times I noticed where when he kind of planted on his back foot, he would kind of shuck his shoulder around a defender, or he would climb the pocket a little bit to get a better lane. That's something Drew Brees was exceptional at. Oftentimes, frankly, it's either smaller guys or guys who have a little bit less arm strength that have that trait. But I thought Wentz today, a couple times, it was just noticeable, especially on some thirds. And it wasn't like he reset to throw way downfield. It would be a tight, short spiral to a tight end to be named later for 3 or 4 yards. That was noticeable. And you mentioned the tight end thing. That is the book on him, right? Is that he throws to tight ends. That's what he likes to do. His first five passes, there was one design screen to Curtis Samuel, and then Armani Rogers he'd thrown to four times on four consecutive passes. So,
and just because Armani Rogers, not Logan Thomas, not Kellen Winslow, Armani Rogers, a guy that played quarterback in college last year. He's an undrafted free agent. We're not expecting to make the team. They have so many injuries he had to play, but that just shows how much Wentz looks to that position. He didn't force things to Terry McLaurin or others. He went to that position he likes, and that was noticeable.
One thing, this is not a knock on the player at all, one disappointment for me, and I'm hoping to get out to the park a couple times this week, but as someone who has not been at practice yet, that I was really looking forward to is I wanted to see Jahan Dotson make a play after the catch. And I think a lot of people that came out here were excited to see the rookie kind of get a pass thrown his way, make a catch, and do something with it.
Zero targets.
Yeah. He just wasn't in any way involved, to the point where I was almost surprised. Like, a lot of this is theater, to be honest. I would have thought they just kind of smoked him a screen at some point.
Right.
There's 10, 12,000, whatever it was, people here. Some of them have his jersey on. All of them want to see this guy particularly. So I really am surprised that he was not involved in the plan necessarily. Again, not a big takeaway for the season, just specific to today. But if you're asking for things that I cared about, it was him. It was Brian Robinson, who I'm sure we'll talk about. And then, honestly, coming into the game, it was Sam Howell. And I really enjoyed my first Sam Howell experience just because he seemed to have a little of that moxie. Here's my – I just texted a buddy in the NFL at this, and I want to see what you think. My early Sam Howell take is Taylor Heinicke with a better arm, which is kind of funny to say. But a couple of the plays he made were very Heinicke-ish. But the problem with Heinicke is that he lacks from being a starter standpoint, he lacks the NFL arm, which we know Sam Howell has. So we'll see ultimately what he becomes. Generally, when you're a fifth-round pick, you don't become a starter. When teams pass on you that much, it kind of tells you what you need to know. So I would bet against it still, just based on history and precedent. But I'll be pulling for him. He seems like he's got some clubs in the bag.
The instinct for me to go search my Twitter feed to find the tweets I've sent out that say Sam Howell is Taylor Heineke with a better arm. I'm really trying to suppress that right now because I can't get to my laptop or Twitter feed. So, but I'm with you.
You know what? While you're talking, I'm going to search it. Have you said it before?
Oh, 100 times.
I thought this was my own big creation today.
No.
I
don't know if I've said it on Twitter, but I've said it in podcast or could have been even on an afternoon drive time show on 106.7. Who knows?
Maybe I'm – you know how sometimes comedians will say a joke?
Right.
And then they won't realize that they actually were in, the comedy cellar when they heard that joke
from someone else. All
maybe
good.
I'm just stealing your line.
Look, it's all good, and, you know, I agree. That's why when I said before, I'm curious to see if something were to happen in the second half of the year, right, with Wentz injury or whatever – what would they do because of that aspect? Because Sam Howell gives you more with the arm, but still has some of the mobility that Taylor Heineke has. That first run, the 17-yard scramble, he had some good patience, couldn't find anything, and then eventually made that move.
I thought his best play, the run was great for a touchdown. His best play to me, because I'm just a complete fanboy for play extension and off-schedule creativity, when he kind of spun out of a sack, if you remember, in the pocket, it was collapsing around him, kind of spins out of it and rolls out to his left, so it would have been like the top of the field if you were watching on TV, and he reset platform and threw to a wide open flat-footed Alex Erickson, who then turned it upfield on a catch and run, and it was, I don't know, they picked up almost 40 yards probably on the play, but well, it was their biggest play of the day. I guess it was a, I'm looking at it here, 40-yard completion. I thought that was his best play. It just showed, to me, what works in this league is accuracy, athleticism, you know, play extension. Like, those are the pillars at quarterback, and it kind of showed all three of those.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's talk about what's maybe – so, look, the reality is we're at the game. You're watching from the press box. This is not always the best angle to see things, and there's, like, so many guys shuffling in and out. It's almost kind of hard to know exactly what you saw. So I don't really have too many takeaways about, like, the defense in particular, other than I'll just note that the first three times the Panthers had a third down opportunity on the first drive, Baker Mayfield and the offense converted all three. Obviously, we know that was an issue last year for this team, so something I'm sure will be discussed this week. But I think the one potential takeaway from this game, if we're being realistic, is what happened in the backfield. And that is that on their second drive of the game, Antonio Gibson, after six fumbles last year, put the ball on the ground again. This is obviously a huge issue for him. The offense, they drafted Brian Robinson for multiple reasons. One was he doesn't drop the ball. He also generally was able to stay healthy at Alabama. So Gibson does that on the second drive. The next drive, Robinson comes in, I think probably for the first time, and immediately takes over the drive. He had 41 combined yards. He's making plays up the middle on the ground. He's making plays as a receiver, you know, had a nice screen pass, got some yards, and then eventually he scores the one-yard touchdown to cap that drive. And I'm not, you know, it's conceivable that that would have been the rotation anyway, but Gibson then ended up coming back in later, and I'm not going to go so far as to suggest we have a running back competition-y kind of thing here, but I've been stating all along that I think Brian Robinson's job, he has a specific role, be the tough guy runner inside, and he gives them insurance if Gibson falters either as a fumbler or injuries. You and I talked the other day about the idea that as sort of a, not necessarily, I don't think you're straight out prediction, but from like an upside oddsy kind of standpoint, saying that Brian Robbins could lead this team in rushing. And I told you, I don't think it was crazy. I definitely don't think it's crazy after watching what we saw today.
Yeah, so a few things on that. I mean, let's just start with, yeah, it was, I was doing three bold predictions. So it's not necessarily expected, but things that realistically could happen that I think would make a lot of sense. And my prediction was Robinson to lead the team in rushing. And really, it's a two-folded take. The first is I really like Brian Robinson. I think he was outstanding in Alabama. They drafted him in the third round for a reason. I think he's going to be a very good kind of one-cut mauler between the tackles in this league. I'm curious to see him get outside on the edges and maybe do some of the outside stuff that they asked him to do and see what that looks like as well. But I like the player. But the second part of this, Ben, is, frankly, it's an indictment on Antonio Gibson, too, for a couple of reasons. He doesn't and hasn't stayed healthy consistently. Even when he has been durable in terms of games played, he's played through injury. He also has fumbled a lot. He had six lost fumbles last season, which is an outrageously high total and, frankly, is just an unacceptable amount for a bell cow. So I think he's very popular with fans for a few reasons. Namely, he was drafted as a wide receiver, converted to running back, and the idea of him is very exciting. And I understand that. He also was one of seven running backs in the NFL last year that ran for 1,000 yards, which I think gets you some fanfare. The problem with just basing your opinion on Antonio Gibson on that anecdote is that he was fourth in carries. I mean, there were a couple guys in the league who ran the ball more than him. So the fact that he was one of seven that ran for 1,000 is actually not a great sign. He should have been like one of three that ran for 1,300 or whatever, just based on his number of carries. If you actually look at the analytics on Antonio Gibson, they're not that kind. I mean, what we can now quantify is how many yards plays are blocked for and how many yards you get. And the difference between what he should have gotten based on blocking and what he got, that ratio for him was one of the worst among running backs in the league. And so you add all that up, they didn't desperately break unwritten rules to keep J.D. McKissic because they felt great about their running back room, right? And then they didn't draft Brian Robinson in the third round because they felt like they didn't need any help. And then he fumbles on his second carry of the preseason. So this is a thing. I mean, I'm normally the guy that's like taking the buzzer away from people in the preseason when they want to hit a buzzer. This is a thing buzzer.
Right.
This is like sound the buzzer. This is absolutely a thing. You were in the presser. You could tell people what Ron said. I mean, he didn't even seem to care about the fumble, at least publicly. He was more mad about his running style on the play. And like he kind of felt like he was just kind of chilling and dancing around and not getting up the field. But I don't know, you know Ron better than I do. He kind of took him to task, I thought, post game a little bit.
Yeah, there are times when Ron will, go in defense mode. I didn't feel that was the case there. I felt like he was frustrated. But I think part of not only is this Gibson's third year, you can be a little frustrated in part because he has other options. He doesn't have to just rely on Gibson. Again, I would still say right now Gibson leads the running backs in touches over the course of the year, but he has other options. And I back before the draft, even before free agency, like my tip view was from, thinking about it, talking to people, whatever, that they were going to get another running back because that four-game winning streak last year, they were able to have a lot of ball control, and the ground game led that way, and Gibson was not able to maintain it. Here's the other thing, I think, and I hadn't really thought about this till now. Carson Wentz is a low-percentage quarterback, relatively speaking, to other NFL starters. That's not a knock. That's just what he is. If you're going to have a low-efficient starter, you also can't have a low-efficient running back, and you just talked about the fact that Gibson leaves a lot of yards on the table, or at least he has the last, did last year. So Robinson, based on what he did at Alabama and the little bit we've seen so far, is more efficient in that regard. So I do wonder if the better combination to a degree is with that. And then there's J.D. McKissic, who had one of those like J.D. McKissic type plays today with a catch and gets a little extra off of it. Like, again, I'm with you. It's a thing. I'm not going to sound the alarm like Gibson's getting benched, but they have other options. They have the inside with Robinson, they have the outside with McKissic, and Gibson is the hybrid, essentially. So what do you do?
So, and I want to clarify, like, my point is not to say Gibson should be benched.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like, that this is now a competition. But I guess my point is, on a scale of Gibson should be the unquestioned one, and these other guys on the depth chart are just here too, or all three of them are vying for the most carries or something. Like, to me, I think the difference between Gibson and Robinson is not what a lot of people think. That's kind of my point. And in fact, I think it's a fairly easy case to make. Look, Gibson was a wide receiver at Memphis when they drafted him, essentially. Robinson was a dominant running back on a national championship team that ran over SEC defenses all year. I mean, he was terrific at Alabama. So the idea that if someone were to say Brian Robinson better natural ball carrier than Antonio Gibson, someone pushing back on that? I don't think so. So it's not crazy to assume then that opportunities might continue to come his way this year. Gibson, because he's the starter, will have a chance to keep him off the field. It's a rhythm position. If you're out there on 12 carries going for 76 yards and a half, well, guess what? Ron Rivera's going to keep feeding you. But if you fumble, if you're leaving things on the field, Robinson's going to get a chance. And I guess my point is just that I think fans should acknowledge, and many of them probably will as this preseason goes on, that it's not like Gibson, because he ran for 1,000 yards last year, is just some, like, above-reproach option in the backfield. I think this is, by the end of the preseason, I think we're going to have a real conversation about Gibson versus Robinson.
I would agree. Like I said, it's hard to have too many takeaways because things were moving so fast, and then you got to start writing in the second half and all these things. Anybody else for you anywhere kind of stood out, good or bad, or just anything comes to mind? We'll just note that Benjamin St. Juice did not play. Rivera said he had some hamstring tightness. This is after he said he was going to play when we asked him about this on Thursday. So that took away one of their effectively starting corners. Danny Johnson played a bit more. But anybody else for you in any way, shape, or form stand out?
Yeah, I guess thumbs up, thumbs down. I've always liked Jeremy Reeves. I just think he's a good football player. I could see him just being a great asset on teams who plays a little defense for years to come, Reed Dowdy style. He came on a blitz, and it probably honestly was like, you know, Masters-level blitz for this time of the preseason. They went zero, and he came, and the Panthers looked like they'd never seen it before, and possibly because the guys that were in the game never had. But Jeremy Reeves got to the quarterback and got a sack as part of a three-tackle performance. I just think he's a player, and whether it's here or somewhere else, that guy should be in the National Football League. I've always liked him.
Yeah, I talked to him after the game in the locker room. He had the blitz. We went through that, and he talked about how, you know, you could see the replay on that one. He had some real good patience waiting. He disguised it. He said he was talking with Percy Butler to make it look like that he was, like, focused on coverage. And then as he saw an opening on the snap, he went and obviously made the play. But I said to him, you know, how are you feeling? Because, like, we've been down this route with you before. You're right there kind of on the edge, and it's kind of gone the wrong way. He says he feels better. He feels like he's got more confidence. You know, I'm sure he's not putting the cart before the horse on making the team. They've got two young safeties in Percy Butler and Derek Forrest, so they would probably have to keep a fifth in order for him to stay. But, you know, I think he's done a good job so far. You know, it's not like they have a ton of other options at safety, so the question is just simply, do they keep the fifth safety probably or not?
And they're so thin at linebacker. Sometimes your inside linebacking depth is where your special teams comes from, that maybe you keep him as a special teams ace type, like a DeShazer Everett of the past might have been, who's no longer here, obviously. And that linebacking position not being stronger on the second, third units maybe benefits him in some way. But I also think he's done enough, and he's got enough film in the regular season from the last couple of years, that if he were to get cut here, he probably feels like he'll land on his feet somewhere with a team that hasn't drafted safeties in the mid to late rounds the last couple of years. And then one other thing I found interesting, not a big deal at all, and certainly not saying that this guy played badly, but Kelvin Harmon, who I'd heard a lot of good things coming out of practices, he had three targets and no catches and had a chance to make a huge catch. There was a deep shot down the sideline that was, I think it was from Sam Howell. And it would have been Howell's kind of first big play of the day. It was thrown 40 yards in the air. And Harmon kind of went up, had his hands on it. Problem was, he ended up having to play popcorn, and he stepped out of bounds, and it ended up being called incomplete. It was just one of those moments where when you're fighting and scratching and clawing for a roster spot at the back of the depth chart, you got to make plays like that. And after a great start to camp, and he'll get more opportunities, you know, you look, he had the second highest target total of the day behind McGowan with three targets. He was tied with Erickson and Milne, and he was the only guy on the team that was targeted that didn't have a catch. So I'm sure he's kicking himself a little bit after that could be big play.
For sure. And by the way, like, to that end, like the sixth receiver spot, that's like one of the spots that seems sort of open. it's probably going to go to a returner. The first two kicks, they didn't get past the 20, and Rivera, when he started his press conference, said it was infuriating. That was the harshest he was.
I couldn't believe he
used that word. Right, infuriating to discuss that. The first, one of the kicks, I think it was Kyrick McGowan, he was like 8 yards deep in the end zone, brought it out. Both kicks, returns got to the 18. So that's the type of thing when you're talking about the guys with these opportunities. It's those type of moments that really can, you know, they only have so many games here. There's only three games, so these are the opportunities, especially on special teams. To practice, you know, I'm sure Nate Katzer would disagree with me, but it's only so much you can do in the return game when you're not out there. All right, last thing. This is the definition of burying the lead. Grant had a reveal today in the press box, and it led to a huge moment. According to Grant, a man who knows his way around some snacks, he had never had a Cheeto in his life. And then I believe Mitch Tischler had some next to you, and you were like, all right, I'm gonna do it. And it was like watching, it was like watching me as a 6-year-old trying to eat spinach at first. It's like, I'm really doubting this. I'm really questioning this. You braved it. You toughed it out. And what was the result?
I think the Cheeto is probably close to an average snack. It's not something that I'll probably eat again, but like by choice, if there are chips or pretzels around that I prefer. But it wasn't terrible. My assumption was that it was going to be an awful, awful, disgusting thing. Because I hate the look of it, the color, the texture, the like that, you know, that airy kind of crunch where there's nothing to it. And yeah. It's like almost like communion wafery or something. I don't know how to describe it. But like there's nothing to it, but it's orange. See, I hate like cheese puffs or cheese doodles, if you know what those are.
See, I'm with you on there. The cheese doodle... That's really, it's like cotton candy. There's like nothing to it. No, the Cheetos, the only thing with the Cheetos, it's kind of messy in your hand. But the taste, I mean, I don't do it very often, but it's very good. Go ahead. What else?
Well, so that was kind of my thought was I thought it was very like cheese doodly, and I put them all into a kind of a drawer. And for me, I don't reopen drawers after I filed it away. Like I didn't ever eat at the Cheesecake Factory until I was an adult because I thought it was just a factory where they made cheesecake, and like on an assembly line, it was just a bunch of cheesecakes, and I hate cheesecake.
I thought that too 20 years ago, the first when they opened.
Like the way I would describe my personality as someone would be to say that like I would never investigate it. I assume it, and it is. So like one time I actually was going out with someone, and this is years ago, in like college, and they're like, let's go to Cheesecake Factory, and I'm like, I don't do cheesecake, and they're like, okay. Well, do you want to go to... And I'm like, no, but, you know, we can if you want to. But for me, I'll do something else. And they're like, that's not cheesecake. Like, you could get cheesecake as a dessert. So then I went there, and it was incredible. I'm like, oh, my God.
The menu was like 87 pages. Yeah.
It's the biggest... It's a freaking Bible shape. You know, it's 400 pages. So it was the best. So I loved it. So my whole point in saying this is I'd filed them into I'm never going to eat this. Mitch found this out. He went and got a couple bags. He kind of wouldn't leave me alone about it, so I ate one.
We were all pestering you because it was Chris Russell was sitting next to you. It was lucky for Russell that you were there because normally we just pester him about whatever he's doing. This time we focus on you. We'll save your other thing we found out today, that you're not a fan of Cool Ranch Doritos. I can't even get into that right now. We don't have enough time to get into that. Grant, appreciate it. Go, of course, listen to Grant on 106.7 Monday to Friday. I can't keep track of the time. 2:30 to 6?
6:30.
2 to 6:30. You think I would know this by now?
It's really. It's
I can't keep track.
4.5 hours. It's way too long to even know. But yes, 2 to 6:30.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Okay, I wanted to get into something else off of on the football side of things to the business side. Team President Jason Wright spoke with a small group of reporters before the game to give us some updates on what's happening with the business side. Obviously, you know, there's always a lot going on that end, and not talking about the Dan Snyder of it all per se, but rather getting updates about what's happening at the stadium, how are ticket sales going, things along those lines, including the stadium. Actually, let's just start with the stadium. Nothing particularly new here other than that Jason Wright said the projected timeline to be in a new stadium remains in 2027, despite the fact that they have obviously had setbacks this year, unable to yet secure a situation. He said there are still ongoing talks with officials in Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. He basically said, though, D.C. is going nowhere until Congress gives D.C. control of the land at the RFK Stadium site. He said, in general, he feels, quote, closer, end quote, to a resolution. So, you know, we'll see about that. But, and as a reminder on the 2027 situation, the lease ends then basically through the 2026 season, and they get out sometime by 2027. But they can extend that whenever they want. They're, you know, that's not really the issue. The hope is for them that they can find a new place. They're not there yet. On the business side, just for some numbers for you, Jason Wright said that they have sold more tickets this year than they did throughout 2021. That's primarily a boost of season tickets. Said suite revenues and season tickets in general are up. So, good for them on that one. He said that he's anticipating currently a 15% bump in ticket sales for the week one game against Jacksonville. He also said that despite all the sort of negative attention out there, that they are anticipating more sponsorship revenue than they've had since 2005. They are still without a major beer sponsor, and there will be a sports book situation here. Probably, they didn't give it a dateline. They're working through the Maryland system. Things seem to be progressing on that front. In addition, new fight song. If you've been paying attention, they gave fans an option to vote. They basically took the old song. They just changed a couple of words. Basically, the one with, quote, fight for our commanders, end quote, is the one that the winner. They debuted it today. You'll recognize the music. You'll pick up the words soon enough. You can also vote on a fan mascot. The four categories were picked today. I don't have it in front of me. I think it was hogs, dog, superhero, and honestly, I forgot what the last one was. Whatever, you can go find it, I'm sure, on the website. There'll be the four categories. Will eventually get down to two. Once they get down to two, then they will, within those two, have some type of specific options there. They will eventually announce a winner during halftime of the January 1st game against Cleveland. Couple other notes here on this. Jason Wright talked about the fact that there have been challenges here, of course. He called it, quote, ghost of Christmas past. But, you know, obviously they weren't naive to the situation when they all took these jobs. And, you know, he believes they're working through it. And again, you guess if you take a look at those sponsorship numbers, in particular, that seems to be a positive sign. That's what he's telling us, So you can take that one from there. All right. And lastly, Jason Wright was asked about his tweet that he sent off on Friday regarding an interview that Scott Abraham, our friend with WJLA, did with Carson Wentz, in which one of the questions that made its rounds on social media was Scott asking Jason Wright Scott asking Carson Wentz about the fact that this is his third team in 3 years. And he phrased it, I don't have the exact quote, but basically he phrased it as that Philadelphia didn't want you, Indianapolis didn't want you, and is this like basically your last chance to be a starting quarterback? The question itself is totally reasonable. Carson Wentz has been asked this in various ways already by reporters. We asked him questions, a lot of tough questions in his press conference, or not tough, but like fair questions. And he's answered them fine. I thought he handled himself here fine. I don't really think this was that big of a deal, but it became a big deal when the team president makes a public statement about it. When asked about it today, Jason Wright said he really didn't have any issue with his own response, even with 24 hours to think about it. He said he did it because he believed, he believed it was, quote, appropriate to defend our guy and stand up for our team in a direct and equivalent way. He went on to say that, they can take criticism, but it needs to be done respectfully. Again, I think Scott's question is totally fine. Was he a little bit aggressive with it? Yeah, I think so. I've talked to Scott about my thoughts on this. I'm not a TV person, right? So, there's a bit of theatrics to that situation, as we all get it, right? That's sort of the the deal for that level, for that kind of entertainment or that kind of news. So I don't know what to say about that aspect of it. It was very odd for Jason Wright to say anything about this publicly. And, you know, I would just say in general that I think that the media core here, we're pretty respectful. I mean, there is a lot, obviously, that goes on with this organization. It would be easy to take pot shots over and over and over again. And I don't think anybody does that for the most part that I can think of. So, I don't know. It was just it was a very curious situation. Hopefully, Scott and Jason can find some sort of resolution here and move forward. But, you know, it was discussed. It was asked. And maybe I'll have more to say on it on some other day. But I just want to get this podcast up now. But I did want to mention that it was discussed. All right, that is it for this episode of the Standard Room Only Podcast. Thanks to Grant Paulson for his time. Thanks to everyone here for checking out the podcast. If you've gotten to this point, I do have a story up on The Athletic. David Aldridge has one up as well from the game, so you can check that out on The Athletic. But that is it for now. Ben Standard signing off, and until next time, see ya.